tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans. Producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows. Interviewing celebrities and showrunners. And bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Oh, yeah. Roxy's favorite song right now. I was waiting for some words, but there it is.
Like a story of love.
Sing it, Roxy.
I really love this song.
It's a beautiful song. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Once Upon a Time After Show here at AfterBuzz TV. I'm sure you recognize this song because it played in tonight's episode. That's why we're opening with it. Season 5, Episode 2, The Price. I am your host, Tiana Hobson. And joining me tonight, we've got the lovely Roxy Stryer.
I'm so happy.
Thank you for being here tonight with us.
Thank you guys for having me. You know I love this show, and you guys have a very full panel all the time. But anytime I can come in, I always love stopping by because this is one of my favorite shows on TV. And you guys are one of my favorite panels.
Yay! Aww. Thank you. And also, we have the awesome Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone. I'm so excited.
Yeah, we are missing Blake again this week, but don't worry, we're working on that. We're going to get you Blake because there's a lot of people complaining that Blake was not here. We're working on it, guys. He's a very busy person.
Can I just say how weird this music video is, guys?
The music video is weird.
The music video is
but
very
it's making
weird.
Me, like, love fest. I love you guys. I love the show. I love this song.
And it was a song for Henry, so it's special. But let's get into tonight's episode because so much happened. I'm a little confused about a lot of things that happened, and I just want to talk it out with you girls, because that's what we do here. Yeah. We're going to start with Camelot. So we're over in Camelot. We're flashback to 6 weeks ago, and we know that everyone's there. King Arthur's like, yo, what's up? Welcome to my crib. Here's my wife, Guinevere. Like, ain't she cute? And then they're like, we're going to throw you guys a ball tonight. And everyone's like so excited. It's like, yay, we're going to a ball. And the charming family's all going to a ball for the first time together. And it's very exciting, right?
Yeah. No, it's very exciting. I'm giggling to myself because the first thing I did when I heard the name Guinevere is open up the notepad on my thing and said, future baby names, Guinevere. I kind of adore that. And everybody would call her V, like Guinevere.
Roxy called dibs.
So,
but you told me that saying my full name, Tiana, was too much.
That's why people call her V. I already have a nickname for her. Come on, T, listen to me.
Cool.
Yeah, I thought that this is great. I love going to the ball. I wish I was invited, but my invitation was lost in the mail 200 years ago.
Well, granted, you have to go through a portal, too, so.
Semantics, you know.
Yeah, so we all know that Regina is pretending to be the savior.
Is she pretending, though? Because it seems like she's very genuine about it. She's like, no.
I knew I
she's
was going
like to self-appointing herself as savior, but I kind of like it. I do love it.
I think that there's a lot of pretending or fake beliefs going on here right now. I'll get into some Emma theories later, but I applaud Regina's confidence in this. I think it's the only way to go forward with it if she is going to go forward with it. She really is trying to protect Emma here. She's not just saying she's the savior because she wants a spotlight on her. Mm-hmm. She's doing it because she wants Emma to be okay and to not use the dark magic anymore. So good for her. Let her own it. She's the savior. Sure, why not?
And I love when Regina uses the dagger without meaning to use the dagger at times, too.
Like strangles,
like,
kind of.
Yeah, you know, it's cute. And, you know, we learn that Merlin is stuck in a tree, or he is the tree. I wasn't exactly
stuck
clear.
In the tree.
I don't understand.
Because they're like, get him out.
Yeah, but, like, how does one get stuck in a tree?
We saw somebody get stuck in a tree tonight, but what is the correlation between those two trees?
Things. So Merlin's stuck in the tree. Regina is being the savior, and she has to figure out how to get Merlin out, because that is the prophecy, is that the savior will get Merlin out of the tree. And her and Emma are kind of rummaging through Merlin's old room, trying to find ideas of what could help them out. And Regina is clearly struggling. And Emma, they get into a little fight about, you know, how Regina kind of stepped forward. And I thought that was an interesting conversation between the two of them.
It's always, whenever they're in a room together, there's always tension. Because one of them is the evil queen and one of them is the savior. And the tables for the first time are kind of turned here. And I don't think Emma likes being looked at as the dark one. I think that she misses being the savior. And tonight was the first time she was going to be able to say, I'm the savior, by the way. And Regina took that from her. But again, she didn't do it maliciously. She did it to help her. I just don't think Emma can see that right now fully.
Yep, absolutely. I think this is Regina's time to shine. I mean, and it's also good that it's in Camelot because no one knows, supposedly no one knows Regina right now. So this is an opportunity for her to build herself as a good person.
Mm-hmm. Well, for now.
But, I mean, one of the perks of being a savior, or at least I thought it was a perk before later on we find out it's not. But Regina, one of the knights, gives her that giant necklace with the jewel on it.
Purple jewel. As sweet as it was, it totally clashed with the wardrobe, so you know it was misplaced.
and they said that. They were like, oh, and now it matches your dress. I was like,
no, it doesn't.
Honey, I don't think that thing would match anything.
Yeah. It's kind of a hard color choice to
I mean, I like purple. Things. It works with her, obviously, but not with that dress.
Purple is a very royal color.
That's true, but it's not like a small little purple thing. It was a massive, like the size of her head, purple thing on her dress.
It was a rock, so I'm like, hey, free jewelry? Okay, sign me up for that.
No, I love magical security. Like, I mean, look at that. That was Big Brother hanging on a necklace.
Except it turns out that it's a spy camera, and this dude's watching her, basically talking to David.
Through
the fireplace. That's just weird. But, you know, when she's having this touching moment with Snow and Charming, talking about going to the ball and how she doesn't want to go now because she doesn't know how to dance. She never got an opportunity to dance at any of the balls that she went to before as the evil queen.
I thought this was endearing. Because it really showed just a human vulnerability of Regina. It's like, you know what? Looking back at all the balls that she's been to, she's either the one crashing it or the one, you know, ruining it in some possible way. She's never really dancing, is she?
I can't believe that we've never noticed that, though. Like, I need to go back and rewatch every single episode there is a ball to see this, because I feel like at some point one of us would have been like, P.S., she never dances. I mean, I guess our mind's on a million other things, but I was pretty surprised by this.
I was surprised by it, but once after hearing it, I'm not surprised because I'm like, you know what? I don't think I have ever seen her dance at a ball. Every ball I can recall in my head, she's, like Marissa said, she's crashing it, she's ruining it,
or she's planning something evil with someone else during it.
She's just over on the sidelines, you know?
Right, but here's the other problem with this. But like we just talked about, she's kind of taking Emma's place as a savior. Now who's teaching her to dance? Emma's parents. Like, she's kind of stepping in the Emma role. And I don't blame her for it. I really think she's trying to help. But I could totally see Emma freaking out about this.
Especially with Emma having that dark one voice in the back of her head being like, look at this girl. She's over here taking over your family. You know, even with Henry and stuff like that. Like, I could definitely see where a jealousy could get there and kind of similar to something of Zelina's status.
Right.
And then, you know, Zelina turned green and Emma will turn gold.
Reptile-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spark like a
glitter.
Like a sweaty glitter monster.
Like a swan glitter.
Yes.
I don't even know what that was. The swan glitter. Yeah. I think that right now Emma's playing it cool. But eventually this darkness is going to take over to the point that she realizes, look, Regina, not only are you taking my parents, not only are you taking my son, not only are you stepping in as the savior, but you're also the reason I turned dark because you forced me to use my darkness. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of this anger and resentment and dark one of her is going to be taken out on Regina, which we see when we eventually flash forward.
Yeah. Some other highlights from the ball that I just want to point out personally was Hook looked hot, I thought, during this. That guy liner was on point. Mm-hmm. That earring, it was very George Michael from like the 80s with that long earring coming down. And he was just giving it to me. So I just had to shout out Hooker for life right here. And
I love it. Me too.
Loved seeing him. And I loved seeing Emma walk into the ball with her mom.
She looked pretty.
She looked gorgeous as well.
She looked like the savior. She looked like the savior. This is the weird part for me because as much as Regina, we saw the outfit changes. That was freaking hysterical. And she puts on the
her like, typical.
Yeah, evil queen outfit. Then she goes to the white one and she looked less evil, but Emma still looks like the savior. Regina still has this edginess to her that Emma doesn't. With her blonde hair and the like loose wave and the crown on her head, she always will look like the savior to me.
What I find interesting is, you know, how I always point out the color clothes and symbolism, that Emma is still in white at this point and mm-hmm. Regina's still in gray. So we still don't know where Regina lies, if she's good or she's evil. We know she's leaning towards good, but right now Emma's still looking like the savior.
I'm glad you pointed that out because I don't know, maybe I'm just colorblind all of a sudden, but I was looking at it and I was like, that's an interesting color choice on Regina here. And then you saw Emma walking, and I was like, she's, when you said she looks like the savior, Roxy, I was like, yeah, because she's in all white and she looks pure and clean and like, yes, that is the angel that's shining down on us. And Regina's in like an off-white or something, but I'm glad you pointed out that it is gray, which is like...
Closer to white, though. You gotta notice that it's closer to white.
It is closer, but she looked uncomfortable. This isn't her role. Well, it looked awkward, which is supposed to.
She's out of place, yeah.
Yeah.
And for someone who learned how to dance 5 minutes ago, homegirl got it down-packed quick because... Mm-hmm. We have, I believe his name ended up being Percival, right?
Percival.
Yes.
One of the knights.
Yes. So the knight ends up asking to cut in on a dance with her and Robin, between her and Robin. And they're
having him for a single second. He was so sketchy from day one.
From day one, when he gave her the necklace, it's like, yo, why didn't Arthur give this to me if it's a gift for the savior?
Right. And P.S., mm-hmm. I forgot to see whose name it was in the chat, but somebody said that the necklace matched her eyes, which is hysterical to me.
Her eyes shadow.
I thought it said her eyes. I was going to say she had purple eyes.
Nope. Still no. It's still clash.
I love it.
I'm colorblind and Roxy just can't read.
Colorblind and illiterate.
Full time. Woo! Full panel right here.
And Marissa's just beautiful and genius, so you know.
Marissa's the smart one.
Nope.
So she's having this conversation with Percival. As they're dancing, they're going backwards and forwards and sideways. And I was like, for someone who learned how to dance 3 minutes ago, good for you. But he basically describes his whole town being attacked and under fire. He came home from the Enchanted Forest, and as soon as he says Enchanted Forest, you're like, oh crap, she done murdered up everybody. Yeah, she was evil. And he tells her, like, you know, she came through the flames and she saw me in the corner hiding and she smiled at me like she enjoyed every second of that, and you're the evil queen. And then busts out a sword and tries to like attack her in the middle of the dance floor.
Okay. This is where I was freaking out. I was like, okay, you cannot attack Regina in that way, in a ball, no less. And then to attack her, man, you can't attack Robin like that. Robin gets stabbed, man. Not cool.
I felt so differently. I felt so bad for this boy.
Oh,
this poor boy.
Are you kidding me? Marissa, you stab Robin and you feel bad for
she
him?
Regina took away his entire family, his entire village, everything he knew and loved. He's the only one who survived. And now she's here messing with his new town. I felt really bad for him. I think that if you're supposed to feel a little bad for him. It's I'm not calling you heartless, but it's a little heartless to not feel bad for him. At the same time, obviously I love Robin. Did I want him to get stabbed? Did I want her to get hurt? No, I didn't want that, of course. But I felt bad. This poor dude, he's had everything taken, and he doesn't know that she's turned less evil. You know?
Okay, I know that I'm gonna... Marissa's not gonna like this, but I agree with Roxy here.
I see where you're coming from.
You know, you hear the story, and it was in that moment that I was able to remember all of the bad things that she did do. And
they don't disappear because she's good. It's still there.
And all the hurt that she's caused, and all those villages, like, yeah, we've seen them on fire, and we've seen her take people hostage and stuff like that, but we haven't really heard, like, my entire village, all the people who lived there were killed, my family's gone, like, women, children, all of that. And so it kind of puts it into a different place. And I know that characters move on and they grow.
I just so desperately, T, like you're saying, all this stuff, I wanted her to look at him and say, instead of saying, who have you told? Say, I'm so sorry. I'm a different person. I'm so sorry. But she didn't. And then I wanted her to mourn the loss of his life.
Okay.
Like she was mourning Robin, but she didn't.
My thing is, if Percival is a knight, first of all, he should be noble and respectful. And he should come with rationale. Not saying that he did. No, what he did was completely irrational. But the thing is, he's supposed to be, you know, coming from understanding, there should have been a moment where he's like, hey, this, you did this to me. It was out of, I get he's coming out of vengeance. But he, there should have been a moment where he could have talked with Regina and figured it all out before just stabbing.
Yeah, of course. That's why we have our entire system here in the United States. If somebody kills somebody, you can't just go and kill them. Like, that's not the way it works. But at the same time,
that's why there's trials in the world.
Of course. So I'm not saying that he handled it the right way, but he definitely got the short end of the stick in this situation. Because he ended up dead, and his whole family ended up dead, and nobody's mourning him, and everybody's moving on thinking he did the wrong thing. And this poor kid was a little child when everything was taken from him, and she didn't even look at him and say, I'm sorry, which I needed from her, because she is
good
now.
Well, she didn't get the chance to say, I'm sorry.
She got the chance to say something, though, and it was, who have you told? That's selfish. That's her wanting to know what happened, and I love her so much.
That's also her trying to, and I know I'm sticking up for Regina.
No, but it's good.
That's also her, you know, she's trying to establish this new image that she's good. So having one person threaten that, like, I get that she's trying to hide it, but yes, she should have had a choice or a chance to redeem herself in that way. And there wasn't enough time for that.
If she's going to be the savior, she's going to have to learn to say sorry. I know it's not in her vocab.
Well, she's going to spend the next few episodes redeeming herself from this.
Yeah, she's got to.
Sorry, I'm just loving this whole conversation that you guys are having right now. This is great. This is what this show is about, guys. What do you guys think at home? This is awesome. And I love how passionate Marissa always is about Regina.
I know, me too.
So
me
it
too.
Makes it that much better for me.
Outlaw queen tonight.
Yeah. I'm not going to get in the argument with Marissa over, but I'm going to let Roxy do that one.
No, I like you said, I mean, Marissa and I have a lot of similar opinions of things, a lot of different opinions, and that's why we do well on panels together.
Because
we can shine lights in different situations.
Well, like Roxy said, Robin does get stabbed by the sword, and Charming comes in and kills Percival, which was
really aggressive.
Really aggressive, I thought. Like, a stab to the gut. Like,
well, I just wasn't expecting it from Charming, because he's usually kind
of...
Especially at a ball, in a public... It's like, I get maybe subduing or knocking him unconscious, but actually killing.
That was a little much for what we're used to from them, but okay.
Charming did not flinch.
He didn't. He went straight forward, and I was like, okay, I thought usually you try to spare the people's lives unless they're actually bad people and without knowing their story, because I think if Charming had known his story as well beforehand, it would have pulled on his heartstrings a little bit too. But Robin is now dying. We're back in the secret room, and he's on the table, and Regina's trying to fix him with magic. The sword has been enchanted to kill Regina, so now that it's stabbed Charming instead, there's nothing she can do. She turns to who else but Emma, because I still refuse to call her the Dark One.
Yeah, I know.
My question is, why would healing be a dark power? You think it'd be a light power. It would come from good, not evil.
I don't think it's healing that's a dark power. I think it's any magic she uses is now dark because she is dark.
Interesting. Speaking from that darkness.
Yeah, but I agree with you. It's like, cut the girl some slack. She's going to save a life. How can that be considered dark? But I guess any magic is.
And, I mean, maybe it's because the magic that was on the sword was a darker magic. So in order to save someone from the dark magic, she had to use some dark magic for that.
All magic comes with a price.
All magic comes with a price. Which is what her little subconscious, rumpled-looking Dark One voice in her head is saying, which, why was no one more concerned that she was talking to the corner?
Right? They asked her,
and then they let her leave after it was done, like, she wasn't just talking to herself.
First of all, they let her actually perform on I can't even think.
Robin Hood.
And Robin, after she was just talking to herself and being slightly crazy. I'm like, let's take a break here.
It was the equivalent of if I'm sitting in this room on the phone and T walks in and says, hey, who are you talking to? That's how much they care.
Yeah.
Like, that's literally the equivalent. They're like, oh, P.S., who are you talking to? No follow-up. Like, she's having a full-blown conversation with a wall. Nothing. Nobody's concerned about that at all.
Like, she's in the right mental state right now.
And it's the things that you hear on her end of, like, no, I can do this. Like, I am the Dark One. I can handle this. It's, those are things that are scary to hear, and then you're not that concerned about her afterwards to at least try and have a conversation about, like,
girl, what's going on in your head?
But at the same time, Regina's not going to call her out because Regina's like, I don't really care what goes on right now. I need Robin.
You all know I love Regina, but she was very selfish in this scene. I was like, Regina, you do not ask Emma to use her power. I was like, I get you have to save Robin. Your love of your life.
What was the alternative?
I don't know. I don't know either. She could have cast a spell or something.
They didn't spend much time thinking about it. Yeah. Innocuous.
No. But do you think that she should have done it the way she did it or just forced Emma? Because she does have the dagger. So she did say, Emma, I'm asking you because I do have the power to, to force you to do this, but I'm asking you.
I think they were in a time crunch too because Robin was bleeding out on the table. Yeah. So it's like, oh, we got to do it now.
I don't blame Regina for what she does here because I think she's kind of an act now, think later. Like, if you don't do this now, he's 100% going to die. But if you do this now, you might turn dark, and we might be able to fix you. So I think that she was just doing the only... Her hands were kind of tied.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I was proud of Emma for doing it for her. I guess it's going to be the start of a really long and dark path.
That was a Kickstarter kind of thing.
Yeah, right. Because what we learn is that Emma's not asking for anything in return for doing this act. And all magic comes with a price. That's what we've been told since season one. That's what we're hearing in her subconscious. And I wonder what the effects of that will be because we saw that she did the spell. She kind of had this urge of power. She makes out with Hook all hot and heavy. And then it's like, woo, I'm feeling a little lightheaded. I'm going to go lay down. And then when she walks outside, we see that her hand is starting to turn a little bit like
the swan green.
Yeah, the swan glitter monster.
We need a better name for
Rumpelskin.
Yeah. It's Rumpelskin. She's getting that Rumpelskin. Yes.
You should use some powder, some cream for that Rumpelskin. Let me lend you some I don't
know. Continue.
So we're not going to let her continue on that. So So we're already seeing an effect of her using this magic and how long she'll be able to hide that from everyone. We don't really know. Some other things that kind of happen.
It's going to be some glove wearing.
Yeah, gloves and then full turtlenecks in summertime. Like she's a teenager with a hickey.
Not to jump too far ahead, but when we see Emma in Storybrooke 6 weeks later, she's pretty clear pale skin. So.
Yeah, but that's how Rumpel does that. Rumpel sometimes looks like...
In Storybrooke, Rumpel was never, like, the Rumpelskin really there. He was Mr. Red.
I'm going to keep going with this. What do you use when you're scaly?
I don't know.
Good some moisturizer.
Lotion, some moisturizer.
He's got some good moisturizer. Well, he should be in a moisturizer commercial. Like, Rumpel here, Rumpel now. Rocks.
Yeah.
Stick on topic, girlfriend.
Wow. So then we learned that, you know, at the end of this whole experience out in Camelot, Guinevere is now talking to her husband, King Arthur, and she's like, yo, dude, I got a bad feeling about these people because something's off. Yes, we know the prophecy from Merlin, but Merlin never tells us how we get to that answer, which is true of all prophecies.
Right. And he already finds out that she was the Dark One, and he's like, it's a fresh start when you're here. No biggie.
Yeah.
No one cares. No one judges you.
Yeah. Everyone gets second chances, which raises the question, what was his second chance?
Right.
What was Guinevere's second chance? I think these are all things that we will then dive into a little bit more as well.
Yeah, great point.
As we're looking for questions. And then, of course, we have to talk about Henry, because how cute was he at the ball?
Him and his girl Violet.
Him and his girl Violet vibing. And
I love how he pulls out an iPod.
And it's a gift from the Savior.
Well, yeah, it's technology.
I was like, oh my God, he's reaching his pocket. What does he have, booze? Like, what's he going to give her right now? Oh my God, Henry's growing up, and then it was an iPod, and I was like, this is great. Like, it's so cute. I can't believe that we made it this long and, like, I'm not invested in a love story for him. I want this to be it.
Well, he's at the age where romance, he's dabbling in it.
How old is he? A teenager?
That's a good question because we don't exactly know how he's aging.
He started off as 11 at 4 more years, so he's got to be, like, 15 now.
All right, so he can totally have himself a little boo.
Yeah.
Totally.
And she's so cute.
She was gorgeous.
Yeah.
This was a fun scene. I find it very interesting how they used a new age, up-to-date song with our today's society to that old-time ball that's simultaneously going on.
And that she didn't ask questions about this, like,
what is this music? How is it playing in my ear? What is going on?
What is going
what
on?
What is this magic?
Yeah. She was totally chill about it.
She was. I liked her a lot. I hope that I know that we'll get to see more of her, but it'll be fun to kind of, I want to see more of them back in Camelot.
It's a cute little storyline that I'm interested in.
I think it's interesting. Her name is Violet. A name of color. I mean, you have Ruby, who's also red. So is Violet anybody that we know?
She from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
She's going to get all big and blown.
Funny, yeah. You just mentioned that because I watched Willy Wonka last night.
Violet.
So, see. Violet.
Violet.
You're turning Violet.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll
see.
Who
could she be? Who's purple?
I don't know. Who's purple?
I don't know.
Other than Maleficent, but we know that's not her.
Oh, God.
Well, she had another daughter.
Yeah.
Maybe.
All right.
Who knows?
All right.
Maybe just reading into it.
Yeah, maybe we're reading too much into it.
Names always have a purpose here.
I think that reading into things is exactly what we do the show for, so
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm happy you are.
So now I want to talk about let's flash forward now to present time in Storybrooke. We have a lot of stuff going on.
I was going to make a fast forward noise.
Oh, okay. I was like, Roxy, what are you doing? So a lot of stuff is happening over here. First things first, the dwarves are trying to test out the new town line because we have a new curse on the town, which always brings new repercussions for crossing that town line.
I find it hysterical how it's always the dwarves that have to cross the line. It can't be anyone else.
Right, and you couldn't pay me to be the first person to cross this line. Like, Dopey, are you kidding me? Are you being dopey right now?
I mean, he said no.
But I would say, I wouldn't just say no. I wouldn't do it. I'd say, yeah. I'm not doing it. And I don't want to leave. I don't care.
I wouldn't have even gone to the line with them.
Right.
They'd be like, come on, guys, we're going to go. Nope, I'm good. I'm going to get a milkshake from Granny's. I'm set. Don't worry about me.
They're sitting there and they're like, we can't stay in here with Swan when she's like, we can't stay in here with Emma when she's like this. It's better than turning into a freaking tree.
Yeah.
In the middle of the road.
Granted, they didn't know they were going to turn into a tree because so many different things happen to them every time they cross that freaking line.
Nothing good.
So, nothing good. So you'd think they'd learn.
Why go test it out? Because nothing good's going to come. So you knew something bad was going to happen when you tried to cross over and you were just willing to let one of your fellow brothers be the experiment and possibly die?
And like while they're at the line, they keep talking about Emma's new curse. I mean, it's like you're talking about a curse. You know that has negative connotation. Mm-hmm. Why would you even do it? Why would you even chance it?
Like at what point in your mind are you sitting there thinking, if I cross this line, there's going to be a bunch of gold that appears? Are you kidding me?
Nope. So he turns into a tree in the middle of the road, which is now a driving hazard for those people who are driving through
saying.
There. Like, now we're talking about people getting in car crashes. Not that many people drive this road, but you can't chop it down because that might kill him.
I'm saying people, they're not going to know he's in it. Yeah, people are going to chop it down.
That's very true, because it's a tree in the middle of the road.
Because that's what you do when there's a tree
But how many civilians actually cross the Storybrooke line? A few people have, but how many are going to actually go into Storybrooke now?
But no, because it's like a real road and people just don't know that Storybrooke's there, but people can still drive on that road.
Mm-hmm.
And
chop down the tree that's in their way.
He's in like what's technically our world, mm-hmm. So.
Why a tree? Why a tree? I mean, we have Merlin in Camelot turned into a tree. We have Dopey now turned into a tree. Why a tree?
I have a very similar question because I'm starting to think, are trees somehow portals? Is there something that they're doing?
Well, we know Emma and August travel through a tree. Mm-hmm. That was technically a wardrobe.
Right.
It could be magical.
I'm Googling tree mythology right now.
Well, trees are immortal, technically, because like you chop it down, you can grow another one. You know, tree is a symbolism of life.
So what do you think that it could be other than a portal of some sort?
It's hard to know right now.
Is there any way that he's just going to die in there? Like, could he just die?
Well, they are concerned about him starving to death.
Tacos.
And they know that he likes tacos. So
it's very
considerate, you know?
Which ties in really well because I think today is National Taco Day.
Oh, maybe I'll go get some tacos
really?
On the way home.
Yeah, I read that somewhere.
It's not Tuesday. Though.
Happy Taco Day. I also love that, I'm just going to talk all about the dwarves right now. I also love that they're taking Sneezy with them as a stone figure everywhere that they travel. Like, he's strapped to the top of the car.
Yeah.
He's over at Granny's with them. Like, they are not letting this dude out of their sight.
I love it.
And then I loved at the end of the episode that Regina just kind of waved her hands and brought him back to life. And I was like, really? That's all you needed to do this whole time? And, like, you let him go the whole day as a stone figure?
You know.
I know she was dealing with some other stuff.
It was like Regina was off dealing with other stuff.
Yeah. So Regina's off dealing with this fury that has come into town. And I wrote down in my notes that it looked like a tree ghost.
Yeah, 100%. It looked like a tree.
So then I was like, okay, we're back in the tree thing. And then later on, Belle explains to us that, you know, it's a fury. And that basically furies come around to collect a debt that hasn't been paid when it deals with magic. And not just any debt, like when it deals with a life.
Right, when a life is owed on something. Yeah. I really like this storyline.
I know furies is Greek mythology, so... I like how they're bringing Greek mythology into this.
Yeah.
So she's dealing with that.
Ghost of the murdered.
Yeah. Ghost of the murdered.
What does Furies. That mean?
Furies are known for being like ghost of the murders.
Huh.
Oh, okay.
Like spirits of people who've been murdered.
Oh.
So who's been murdered?
Who's been
murdered? It was a really creepy thing, and I definitely felt for Robin when he kept getting swooped up and taken away.
Robin gets picked on so much on this show.
I was like, poor kid.
And then Roland standing there like, Dad, no!
Daddy. Oh my god. Okay, Regina, how amazing was she trying to fight off this fury? Okay, first of all, she's in a forest. Having all those fireballs, I was like, you're in a forest.
Yeah,
you're gonna cause a wildfire. I was like, calm down. But I loved how the Charmings were... This is the second time the Charmings were saving her. I love this family.
Again, with my point that eventually, Regina goes to talk to Emma about this. Emma's saying, you owe a debt, you have to pay it. And what does she do? She goes to pay it, and she's saved by Emma's parents. Once again, they're starting to love her. They're saving her. They're saying, we won't let you go. They're parenting Regina right now, and it's going to be a huge blowout.
You know, it's great that they are, because Regina's parents weren't that great either. So it's good to have just, like, good steady foundation right now.
Yep, but I think that Emma's not going to see it that way.
I think that there is a lot going on with Emma, and we know that this fury is there, and everyone thinks it's because of Emma, and it's actually because of Regina. And then we also know that in the curse, we also have brought back, it sounds like, everyone from Camelot. It sounds like Camelot is all here, too. So there's just a lot of things that are up in the air, and we're trying to figure out. But with the fury, I mean, I love that Regina went and finally was like, okay, if I'm going to be the savior, I need to sacrifice myself for this, because Emma basically Emma's giving her clues on how to be a good savior this whole episode. But then Emma's also planting the seed in Regina's mind with the doubt. And all you need is a little bit of doubt in yourself, and then you're not going to believe in it. And then every time anyone talked to Regina after that, it was like, well, you don't believe I can be the savior.
Yeah.
And
but tonight we find out that they do. And they say, if anybody's going to be the savior, it's going to be you. My question is...
I love this so much.
Yeah, it was amazing. It's amazing. My question is, now is the debt paid? Like, is this fury gone, or have we not seen the last of
the fury?
And
who is the dark hooded figure that was on the boat in the middle of the mist? Because we never saw that person's face. And yes, I think it was set up to look like it was maybe the Dark One, but maybe it was Merlin or someone else. Like,
I don't know.
We didn't see a face. We don't know what that actually was.
Yeah, okay. I don't think we're done with it.
So I'm simultaneously, you know, researching furies. And one of the furies is named, get this, Megara.
Megara?
Hercules?
Oh my gosh!
Like Meg?
A fury, according to Greek mythology, one of them is named Megara, which is, in translation, jealousy.
Mm.
So it totally makes Hercules. That makes sense.
We're tying
so
him.
If it was Hades and Megara, oh my god, I'd be dying. Gosh,
wow. That could have been Hades.
Interesting.
How amazing would that be? I think that might be.
I'm speechless. And then it feeds into the jealousy thing that you're hinting at, Roxy, with this whole Emma seeing her parents with Regina more and helping her out and believing in her. Yeah, I could see that. Ooh, do you guys...
Good one.
Oh, I love
good
this.
Good one, Marissa.
People are saying Grim Reaper in the chat role. I'm not sure. I kind of like my theory.
Mm. Could also Grim Reaper.
But
that would take the show on a very dark turn for like a family show.
But if we're
going
to go with furies and the whole Greek mythology, that would totally make sense.
Timothy in the chat says the fury took 1/5 of each of the person's lives, which I could see happening, but how's that going to affect them then?
Well, 5 is an unlucky number.
I love you take everything to the next level. I love it. I love it.
Marissa's just on it all the time, always. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just reading over my notes.
Yeah, because so much happened.
Yeah, so much happened.
I took like 15 pages, and I'm straight up dead.
I didn't go in the order I was going to plan to, so now I'm catching up. Oh, so let's talk about Emma and her being in Storybrooke. So she's like popping up left and right. Henry's like, Emma Swan, Emma Swan, Emma Swan. She pops up, and you can tell that there's still those people that she still genuinely has feelings for, like her family. And Henry, she's like, Henry, you didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
It's everyone else that did.
And which is weird, because Regina kind of was always like that too, when she mm-hmm. was the evil queen. Mm-hmm.
It's just, you see a lot of those similarities going on now, and you see that Emma is fully accepting of who she is as the Dark One, and she doesn't understand why everyone else can't just get on board. Do you think that if people just accepted her as the Dark One, that they could all coexist in harmony?
No, never. We can't even accept her as the Dark One. Yeah. I highly doubt her family is going to accept her as the Dark One.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I still, guys, I'm going back for a second, because I don't believe that she has embraced the darkness. She's saying she has. She tonight tells Rumple that she has. We see different scenarios in which she's being dark. But I think that this is all some sort of hoax, because I think that if she doesn't act this way, something worse is going to happen. So I think she's trying to prove to Rumple, to the Dark One, that she is in... She says to him tonight, I've embraced the darkness. He's like, I know you have. I don't think she has. I think this is a lie. I don't know why exactly. And I think she's become a little more dark, but I don't think she's as dark as she's letting on. She hasn't let anybody really get hurt yet. So I still believe in her, and I think she's in there.
I mean, I agree with that. Also, because there seems like there's a lot of humanity still left within Emma. There's a lot of good. You can see the light mm-hmm. there. And then even Rumple talking to her, inner voice of Rumple was saying that the one of the greatest weakness of all the Dark Ones is that family, friendship, love, all these things that Emma still has and that are still really existing right now with everyone who wants to save her is still existing. So that, like, in a way is helping her not go completely dark.
I think I agree with that theory as well. And I love that when Hook is, you know, desperately trying to help her, he's basically like, I spent years hunting the Dark One to get revenge. I can spend years trying to help the woman that I love. He goes to Belle to talk about, like, how do you have a relationship with the Dark One? You know, right. Like, give me some dating tips.
And that's another reason they talk about the kiss. So he goes and does the kiss. And another reason it doesn't work is because she hasn't hit the point yet. She's not the Dark One. So right. This kiss isn't going to work, because you can't bring somebody back from something that they aren't yet. So I like actually watching this relationship unfold between Belle and Hook. Please, dear God, don't let it go down any sort of direction that I don't want it to. But as of now, I get like they're kind of bonding over the fact that they're in love with people. It's a little bit hopeless to be in love with right now. Yeah.
And Gold is still just knocked unconscious. It's been 6 weeks. Guys, and he's not in a hospital. He's just laying on a couch in the back of his store. Straight chilling.
He looks pretty comfy, though.
Yeah, maybe we should get some medical attention. I'm just saying. Like, it's been 6 weeks.
Well, they've been gone, too, for 6 weeks. It's not like anyone's really been there to take care of him.
Why do we need medical attention when we have a flower that's a rose that tells us when he's going to die?
Yes, true. That's true. I mean, the flower with the rose is a great nod to the movie.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to keep track of him, but it's also, like, what's happening to him? Like, we haven't even... All we see are clips of him, like, laying on the couch and Belle sitting next to him at times. We haven't gone into his mind to be like, is he hearing what's going on?
Well, what if his mind is actually the inner astral projection that's appearing towards Emma?
Exactly. So we need him to wake up so he'll stop trying to tempt her to the dark side.
Right. And I also will add this. My one complaint of this episode and this season so far, and I know I'm gonna take crap for this, but I have to say
I know what it is.
Dude, that flower dough. That flower dough looks like poop. It's so bad.
What are you talking about? It's so glowy.
Yeah, it's like CGI at its worst on this. I don't know what ABC, like, you gotta put a little more money into that.
All the money went into the Fury tonight.
That's very true.
That's true. The Fury looked great. So I just have to suck it up and know that I don't like the way it looks. It's just reoccurring now, and I'm like, oh crap.
For something that's so, I totally get where you're coming, but for something that's so iconic in the Disney lore, mm-hmm. you'd think it would look a little bit better.
Exactly. That's my problem. But okay, I'll definitely cut them slack. Everything else is looking great. As always, the costumes, the makeup, everything. So if I don't like the flower, then I don't like the freaking flower.
That Fury was scary.
Yeah, that was.
The Fury was scary. And then speaking of all this Dark One mess, we know that Arthur's here in Storybrooke, but he's missing Excalibur. He does not have the sword on him. No one knows where it is. They're like,
I know where it is.
Oh, really? Hmm. I think we found out where it is tonight. It's Emma's got this awesome new house that she's living in all alone.
Although she wants to be living with Hook because she's still Illy's.
She still is in love with him. It's okay. It's a cute little spot, and she's got this room with a funny looking lock on it. And then you go in there and down there and Rumpled leads her, and there's the sword back in the stone.
Yeah, but we do know that Hook saw this room with the lock, mm-hmm. so he knows that something could be behind there. I just think that the fact that she couldn't pull it out, that she had, that all these things are leading to the fact that she is good.
At least she didn't poof into a dust this time.
Yeah.
Compared to the last week.
That's true.
She's too powerful to do that.
I wonder where we're going with this, though, because now he says it's going to be way more difficult than that.
There's a price to pay.
Yeah.
There's a price to pay to put the sword back together. And he says something else that because they want to put the sword back together to snuff out all of the light and really fully embrace the darkness. And I'm thinking snuffing out the light means, you know, does she have to kill her family and friends and the people that she loves? Or will the sword being put back together just make her not care about her family as much as she still is struggling with? Because we even saw the shot towards the end of the episode where everyone's in Granny's hanging out, having fun. Henry and Violet are re-meeting each other again, having like the same little meet cute almost, just in different time zones and stuff. And you see Emma standing outside looking in, which is always a place that Regina was left to stand on the outside looking in with everyone celebrating.
We've seen it a million times. Just roles are reversed now.
Yeah, the roles are reversed. So clearly she's still caring about them. So what is putting this Excalibur back together going to do to benefit her? And what's it going to do to benefit King Arthur and Guinevere? Because we heard them say, we have to get that thing back together or we'll lose everything that we've been working for.
Right, and we don't even know the full extent of what that means. Marissa, what are you laughing about over on the chat?
People, I forget who, but someone hashtag poopy rose.
Oh, fair.
There you go.
Yeah, so maybe people agree with me about the rose.
It was poopy Timothy. Rose. Thank you, Timothy.
Thanks, Timothy. Yeah, I don't know exactly. Are you guys trusting right now Arthur and Guinevere?
No. But I love Arthur, but and him and his, we don't know enough of him and his knights and his people from Camelot yet and how the heck they ended up in Storybrooke.
Yeah, and I'm always hesitant to trust new people anyways. Yeah. And now hearing
that they got some trust issues, girl.
Yeah, I mean, trust issues, but just hearing them kind of being together and like, we have to get the sword back together. Mm-hmm. What do they want it for so badly? What's their angle? Because everyone has an angle, and I think that's why he wasn't really that mad that Regina lied about being the savior at first and revealing that she's the evil queen, because he's like, look, I have an angle too. And my angle for right now, I have to let you guys think I'm cool with this so that I can still achieve my great achievement that I want, because I need to use you guys to get to what I need.
I love what somebody in the chat just said, Christina Barker, the guy in the movie theater told her not to pull out the sword, and we saw mm-hmm. that last week. So bad things are coming from this.
It's destined for someone else to pull that sword out.
Yeah.
The savior. Who's the real savior?
Well, I know who you think it is.
We'll see about that.
We shall see.
It's Zelina, okay?
Oh, it's Zelina is going to be the one to come to the rescue.
Heck no. Zelina just needs to get out.
Cruz Peter says, the price is probably to stay dark.
Jessica says, hashtag find Zelina. No, Zelina can be lost.
Zelina, and I'm still very concerned about her pregnancy, because I know we saw her for a scene tonight, and it was basically, keep your mouth shut, I'm going to take your voice away.
Mm-hmm.
So that you
was
can't,
great. I love Regina.
Yeah, so you can't tell everyone, you know, the truth about things. And there was something about, you know, like needing to get like a doctor for some prenatal care type of thing. But I'm still like, I haven't seen her back in Storybrooke.
We need Doc to help her.
and Rumble.
Well, you weren't here last week because I said when they came back from the flashback, it's been 6 weeks. She should be showing a little bit more at this point, I felt. And I don't know if she had a bump or not when they came back. So I don't know if maybe she's lying about the pregnancy or if while they're in Camelot, she loses the baby or something like that. Because I want to see her in Storybrooke to prove that she's pregnant and see a baby bump.
I agree. And also, I feel like on any of these shows about magic or vampires or whatever it is, your pregnancy happens quicker, if anything. So where's your bump, girl?
Where your bump at?
Hashtag where your bump at.
We got to spend more time in Camelot to find that out.
Where her bump went?
Where her bump went.
Where her bump went.
Tonight we only got the first night of them in Camelot, so we still have 6 more weeks to go.
Still so much happening. Do you guys have anything else from this episode you wanted to touch on?
No. Oh, Outlaw Queen. So much Outlaw Queen. I love it so much.
I know you do.
Oh.
Captain Swan. That's what's good.
I can't say enough.
YT, what do you got for us?
Oh, no, I was just making sure because I was going to jump into, like, some news and gossip.
I want to hear.
AfterBuzz TV News.
So I'm sure that a lot of people have heard this already, but our favorite Belle, Emily DeRavin in real life, is pregnant. So that'll be fun for us to see her hide her bump for
the
whole season.
Where the bump at, though?
Where the bump at, though?
Or are they going to write it into this story?
Or it'll be interesting to see if they do another pregnancy storyline since we just had one last season with Snow and David. But
I think she could actually make it through the end of the season with us not noticing her bump. Because of where they are taping.
They can make it halfway through the season.
Yeah, halfway.
I think by next year's episodes, we'll be having her carrying large piles of, like, laundry baskets and stuff like that to hide it. But also, she's been promoted to a series regular, but she's not really there and really involved in a whole lot right now.
But that's why we're involving her a little more right now.
Yeah, there is a lot going on, and she's getting, like, a scene here and there, so it might be easy to kind of...
Zelina's gonna steal her baby.
Maybe that's how
Marcel's like, Roxy, what are you talking about?
Zelina just needs to leave. Just write her off for good.
Instead
and I mean
of
that.
Bye Felicia, it's bye Zelina.
Bye Zelina.
I'm over it.
I love it.
Thank you, Stephen. And I think that's all I have for news and gossip.
Some predictions?
So let's do some predictions.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
Why did I write down on my predictions need hero? Does anybody know?
Because you need
a hero
to pull
the sword out.
They said it had to be a hero.
I'm holding up a hero to the end of the night.
Yeah.
Also, I wrote down Emma and Hook. And I think that's about all I had to say with my predictions.
Emma and Hook.
He's gonna save her somehow. They're so cute. I love them.
And I don't want anyone to think that his kiss not working means that they're not
true
loves.
Right. I know.
Don't want people saying that because I already know people are thinking it. And I don't think that's the case. I think that the darkness just, it's more than just a kiss to cure this.
There's nothing to cure yet because she hasn't gone down that path.
Well, and even if there was, like, Belle and Rumple were together for a long time and they're true loves and she kissed him many times and he was still the dark one. So you can't expect a kiss to cure something like this.
That's simple. My thing is, this is the curse put on by Emma. She said the one thing that she purposely left out is that it can't be broken by a savior. So what are we not... We got to think outside the box here to break this curse.
Maybe Regina's trying to be too much of a hero because that's what she thinks... Or a savior because that's what she thinks is needed. But what's actually needed is an anti-savior, which Regina kind of is.
So the antithesis of a hero.
Yeah.
I like it.
I don't actually understand fully what I just said. No, but I don't know what an
anti-hero
is.
You said it with conviction. Yeah, that's important.
But that's what I'm going to say.
I'm with you. I think that, I'm on Team T.
Is it too obvious to think that Regina might be the one to pull out the sword?
No, I don't think it's too obvious, but I think it's going to be Henry.
Henry. But he's just a writer.
Yeah, he is a writer,
I think it might be someone like Violet. Like, we don't know what her deal is yet.
Who are you, Violet?
Who are you?
What if she hurts Henry? Oh my God, I'll cry.
Oh my
She
God.
Better not hurt Henry.
She seems too sweet to hurt Henry in that way. My thing is, okay, Excalibur / the dagger, we know technically belongs to King Arthur, but now it's under the possession of the Dark One, Emma. But if they put if the sword gets merged together and becomes Excalibur, who does it technically belong to? So whoever wields it So again, I think this goes into my prediction. Whoever puts the sword together and wields it can destroy it to destroy the Dark One for good.
But Snow did say, in us succeeding, Emma loses.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But
that was a great line, too.
Yeah.
And not just Emma. I think it was more so the Dark One loses, and Emma's still there.
One of my other favorite lines, a curse isn't a curse anymore when the afflicted wants it. Thank you, Belle, for that.
Thank you, Belle. You're so knowledgeable. All right, guys. We are wrapping things up here. Thank you so much for tuning into our show tonight. Make sure you guys... thank you for chatting with Marissa in the chat role. Thank you for leaving us comments on YouTube and iTunes. We also have an AfterBuzz Media Tumblr account now, so make sure you guys go like and subscribe and all the jazz with that stuff. And where can people talk to you guys throughout the week to hear what you have to say about Once Upon a Time?
You can follow me and tweeting about Outlaw Queen at Serafini TV.
And you guys can find me at Roxy Stryer. And thank you guys again for inviting me to be on your panel
this
week.
Thank you, Roxy, for joining us. And as always, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at the Tiana Hobson, and I will be tweeting all of my love for Hookers for Life, all that jazz. Thank you so much for tuning in, guys, and we'll see you next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.